The Deal Lawyer Podcast with John Andrews, powered by JMW Solicitors.
Hello and welcome to the Deal Lawyer Podcast. I'm John Andrews, and today I'm joined by Andrew Campbell, who is going to talk to us about a really interesting product that's come onto the market, which is will be of interest to any buyers or sellers of businesses that are considering doing deals where there's deferred consideration. Welcome to the podcast, Andrew.
Thank you, John. Good to meet you.
A lot of the people who listen to this podcast are either first-time buyers of businesses or you know, in the early stages of doing their second and third deals. And a lot of the deals that we do for people who listen to this podcast and for other clients often involve a large element of deferred consideration, usually structured by way of maybe some cash that's already retained in the business, so some retained profit that's used for the upfront payment. Owner-managed businesses, which are then sold on a deferred consideration basis. So when I first got in contact with you and saw the product that you guys have actually put together, I thought would be of particular interest to the listeners of this podcast. So in very simple terms, could you perhaps just give us an outline of how your product works?
It's a relatively new product, but the idea isn't that new. But back in 2014, one of our clients came to us. They were doing a Vimbo. It was 11 million over 7 years. And the two guys who had the biggest chunk of the money were concerned that if one or other of them, you know, passed away during the exit period, then it would have cast some doubt over the company's ability to continue paying the deferred. Yeah. So they came to us and said, look, you know, is there anything that you can do here? And so we invented this product, which basically underpins the deferred period so that if somebody dies during that period, then the amount of cover, which is arranged on a declining balance basis to pretty much mirror the deferred. Yeah. So if death occurs at any time, then the remaining deferred should be cleared off by the balance of the cover at that point.
Okay, and you say it's a decrease in balance, so it tracks the payment or the reduction of the deferred consideration then, yeah?
Correct. So one of the things that our underwriters want to see is that section of the SPA, which kind of defines and describes the shape of the deferred. So in other words, the amount and the timescale. That then establishes what we call insurable interest, which is one of the sort of key sort of tenets of insurance generally. And so once that's established, our underwriters will be able to, you know, match the risk with the cover.
Okay, so just to be clear, the insurance benefits that the sellers of the business, essentially.
I would say, fair to say that most of the inquiries that we get are coming from sell side.
Yeah.
However, I think what buy side quickly realizes is that in the event of the death of the seller and the debt then being extinguished, obviously that's a debt that comes off the seller's off the buyer's balance sheet.
Yeah,
it's kind of a win-win for both sides.
That's actually a good way of putting it, actually. And in terms of, you know, typically who's paying the premium, does that vary between buyer and seller?
Nope, that must be paid by Nuco.
Right. Okay. So that would be the okay. Got that. So in terms of the funding of the premium, so if Nuco pays that, is it possible to reach some arrangement between the typical buyers and sellers as to how that's accounted for? Essentially,
it's possible. We've never seen that situation, and we've done I don't know how many hundred millions of cover now. But I think it's worth saying that obviously premiums, it's always relative.
Yeah.
But we've never had anybody, if you like, flinch.
Yeah.
In terms of the amount of premium, in terms of a blip on the financial radar. And I think most, let's be honest here, in a lot of cases, the sellers are still very kind of influential.
Yeah.
in these situations. And so we've never seen any kind of a mix, or indeed a seller paying the premiums. It's always been the company.
Okay. So in the event of the death of a seller, the insurance pays out to NewCo.
Correct.
Yep. And it then gives NewCo the ability to discharge the deferred consideration. Yeah.
Exactly. In fact, guys like you would actually want to see some words in the SPA that says, this is this policy and this is what it's for, so that the buyers can't run off and buy a Bentley or something like that. So it's usually explicitly described in the SPA or some side letter if it's after the event, saying this is what the cover's for, this is who it should be paid to, no deviation from that understanding.
Okay, so it's a bit like the kind of ring fencing that you do maybe in a cross option agreement in the event of a death.
Exactly, so
typical sales. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. And then in terms of the events of in the event of death, if I understand it correctly, that pays out the complete deferred consideration even if there's more than one seller. Is that right?
Yes, it can do. I should say though that while you'll know yourself that repayments of deferred can be lumpy.
Yeah.
And will be subject to the economy in general. It'll be subject to things like, an event like COVID or the financial crash or whatever. So
yeah.
First of all, let's say it's 10 million over 5 years. We would always, if that's what it says in the SPA, we would normally encourage people to say, well, what's the backstop here? And the backstop might be a year or two after that. And so we would always encourage people to say, look, if it's a 5 year hope, let's say,
yeah,
we should probably make it a 7 year term on the cover.
Right.
So that if there's any kind of temporary derailment, then that's catered for. However, at the point of, if there was a death along the way, then the chances of the deferred and the sum assured being exactly matched off at that point is pretty remote.
Right.
Okay. So there could be temporary delays on deferred, there could be acceleration of deferred. But the point is that those two sums are unlikely to be exactly matched. So the insurance will either be slightly under or perhaps a bit over.
Right.
If it's a bit over, then obviously the deferred gets cleared out, but any balance is basically kept by the company and is treated as if it was a payout in the same way as a key man policy might be.
Right.
It simply just comes into the company. If, however, the insurance is less than the deferred, well, obviously it's going to take a big chunk out of it, but it might be that there's a balance and the family, the heirs, come to terms, probably through people like you, with the company and say, look, there's some money left over here. We need to kind of redo things and basically rebudget, if you like. But the point is that at that point, a large amount of the deferred is going to come out of the picture.
Right. Okay. And obviously that's an attractive proposition for sellers to have. Now they've got the peace of mind that in the event of death.
It seems to be. I have to say, we've got a virtually 100% hit rate.
Right.
But there is an allusion to that because we have no direct to market proposition. So our proposition always comes through somebody like you.
Right.
So by the time your client gets to us, the proposition has, in a sense, been sold already.
Yeah.
So that vendor or those vendors are already probably on board, and we're really only talking about the details.
Right. Okay. So if you were a buyer in this market, structuring deals on the basis of deferred consideration, and as I say, a lot of the listeners to this podcast are. Is there a way of putting a package together where you're looking at when you're going to prospective sellers and saying, look, as part of the deal, part of the structure that we're proposing, there is this insurance product that's available, and we can work with you to put that in place and make the, I guess, the structure of the deal more attractive to potential sellers.
We already work with a couple of financiers who take that approach. Who basically say, look, it's an inertia thing here. You should be doing this unless you say no. We've certainly had one situation where the sellers, once they understood the concept of deferred consideration insurance, basically deferred the deal about a month to make sure the thing was in place.
So the million-dollar question for you, Andrew, really is this. What's this going to cost?
The bulk of our clients are at the mature end of the career spectrum.
Let's put it politely.
Yeah. Indeed. So typically they come to us anywhere after age 55. We've got up to about age 75. So they're in that kind of zone. Most of them are kind of what used to be called normal retirement age. So yeah. 60s to 65 kind of window there. And for that kind of individual, and so these guys are typically paying about $1,500 to $2,000 a year per million of cover.
Right. And I guess if we're looking at a typical deferred consideration deal, typically they're going to be between a 2 and 5 year term. Would that be your experience?
The longest that we've seen, which was got clearance by HMRC, was 20 years.
Right.
Now, you and I both know that that's probably exceptional.
Yeah.
So, as you say, typically it's more kind of 3, 5, or as much as 10.
Right. Okay.
And we don't see many beyond 10.
But in the scheme of things, I mean, the premiums that you're talking about, you know, are eminently affordable, aren't they?
They are, but I would qualify this to some degree. I mentioned that our cohort tend to be guys in their 60s.
Yeah.
And there are a number of those guys who've enjoyed their career a bit too much.
Haven't we all?
I'm being diplomatic again.
Yeah.
So about a third of those people come to us with the usual things that plague that age group. So we'll see our share of raised blood pressure, raised cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, that kind of thing, raised BMI sometimes. So about a third of our applicants receive what's called a rating. In other words, insurance term, meaning they're asked to pay a bit more.
Right.
In the last 10 years, we've only seen two people actually be refused. Right. One guy knew that he was going to be refused. his health problems were just so bad. And the other guy, it rather came out of the blue. And so we always go through a kind of medical process.
I was going to ask you. I'm guessing there's a medical process to it. Yeah.
Indeed. And luckily, that chap, something was actually caught on our medical, which if it had not, I'm not claiming anything here. It was just lucky timing. But the lucky timing meant that he's still here. Whereas the thing that was caught, if it had gone unchecked for much longer, there would have been a tipping point.
Yeah.
But my overall point here is that twice in maybe 10 years across hundreds of people, we've had two refused. So it's a very rare thing that people get refused.
That there are many deals where sellers feel so exposed in doing deferred consideration deals and understandably feel nervous about them. And any products on the market, you know, such as warranty indemnity insurance, this deferred consideration insurance, anything that could shore up, you know, that their insecurities and worries about being a deal has got to be a good thing.
Just bring a bit more comfort.
Absolutely. And it facilitates the deals getting done. So
we're seeing really quite an uptick in companies selling to employees.
Yeah.
And pretty much all of those deals are, you know, not always 100% deferred consideration, but there's a big chunk there because generally speaking, employees don't have, you know, the financial wherewithal to settle on day one. So that you know, if you have listeners to the podcast who are kind of in that space, then DCI, deferred consideration insurance, really plays a part there in creating comfort for both sides.
Well, it's interesting. We did a podcast a few weeks ago on employee ownership trusts, which is what I think you're talking about.
Exactly. Yes.
And we had a good reaction to that podcast, and they're becoming increasingly more common. We deal with those at JMW. We've done a number of those, you know, and there are some real advantages for, you know, owner managed businesses going down that route from a tax perspective. But as you say, there is a nervousness of going along that route because all of the consideration often is on a deferred basis.
Correct. Yes. So I would say that the majority of the things that we get involved in now tend to be transitions to employee ownership.
Okay,
EOTs. Yeah.
Well, look, thanks very much for joining us today, Andrew.
You're very welcome. Nice to meet you.
You've been listening to the Deal Lawyer podcast with John Andrews. I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
The Deal Lawyer podcast with John Andrews. Powered by JMW Solicitors.